You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 54, Legacy in Tears of
In Response, a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about Legacy in Tears.
This time.
Oh yeah. But first we have to thank our Patreons, Christian Noitz and Matt Duncan, for making all this possible. Thank you very much. If you want to join this elite club, just go on patreon.com/response_legacy. But first, guys, have you seen on Reddit the thread where some person asked the community which podcasts they hear? Have you seen that?
No.
not really at the moment, because how did you find this thread? Because I'm
scrolling Reddit all the time and just don't have to do anything all day.
Was it under Legacy?
It was an MTG Legacy.
Okay, yeah.
And oh my gosh, we were mentioned, I think, 2 or 3 times in the whole thread, and was amazing. It was just such an amazing feeling to get recognized by the community. So shout out to you guys as our listeners. It's great to get such a nice feedback from you.
Well, I just have to ask.
Okay.
Were we mentioned in a good or a bad way?
They said we were the naughtiest podcast.
No, but really, I think we were mentioned in a good way.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, feedback is always appreciated. And so thank you very much to our listeners. And also, it would be great if you could rate us on your favorite podcast app. So on Spotify and on Apple Podcast. It doesn't matter if you give us 1 star or 5.
It just has to be honest, of course.
Oh yeah, for sure.
We appreciate it.
I think
it.
5 is should be the right.
if it would be coming down to you, Peter, then of course, all 5 stars.
But you two are also on the podcast, so yeah.
Okay, so now we are heading into the episode. I think this time tier lists are all the hassle. They're everywhere. Everyone is making tier lists. It's the flavor of the month, basically. And have you two guys seen the epic tier list from Alex McKinley on epicstorm.com?
Not really. You just briefly mentioned it to us prior that we started recording. And I think it's a great idea at the moment, because Legacy does not really look that soft at all. And I think it would be nice to go on this task a little bit and try to divide this, let's say, this mess of legacy decks into a few tier categories to clean things up and see if we can see a trend, or I don't know if there is allegedly a good or best deck in the format or not. It is not so clear, and I think with this tier list maker, it could really help to understand that better.
So we thought about making our own tier list in this episode, and you as our listener will be right at the action where we are doing this. Yeah. And you can hear the thought process that we are taking into account here. The only question I have to ask Dan and Peter, how do we approach this? Do we work from bottom up, from the lowest tier to the best tier, or do we work from the S tier to the bottom down, or do we do just talking about the deck and then put it into a category?
I would say so, because I think it would be easier to first have the deck in mind and then decide, okay, how strong it is. other than, okay, if I would ask you, name your C-tier deck, please.
Yeah.
What deck do you name?
I think
going maybe down in, or picking the most popular decks and then see where we would put them is a nice approach to this. To fill this list up and have all the categories assigned.
Yeah, I think it's also the more scientific way.
Yep.
Because like you get an impression of a deck, you talk about it, and then you decide if it's bad, good, strong, or basically in what tier we would like to put it in.
Yep.
Yeah, we will try to guide you through our thoughts as good as possible.
And for scientific research processes, we use
for the data for purposes.
We use the data from MTG Goldfish for the metagame percentage on the 22nd of May.
Exactly. Yeah, we could even then try to fit some additional decks in if some of them come to mind for us. But I would say why not start and have a look at the first couple of decks and see what our thoughts are, basically. At the start, we have the deck with the most meta share, which is at the moment almost just a little bit shy of 10%, which is Reanimator. It's basically everywhere. The question is it then, what kind of deck would it be, according to your thoughts?
Reanimator is kind of strange, actually. I think it's only at the top of the metagame because of MTGO, because of the speed of the deck, mm-hmm. because it can grind leagues that fast and that easily. And also, I mean, yeah, it has a really high power level.
Mm-hmm.
It has gained a strong card in Atraxa. But I still think Grizzlebrand is simply the best creature ever printed, and Atraxa is more like a nice to have in certain situations. So I don't actually believe that Atraxa was the key to push this deck over the top.
Yeah.
It's just I just think it's cheap, it's easily played, it's fast, and therefore it has such a high percentage in metagames.
It is also, I think Atraxa is not like a staple of this deck at the moment, right?
It's mostly a one-off in the deck.
Yeah.
Just, it can have some tools to rebuild when low on life.
Yeah.
One of the key cards I would also say is like Archon of Cruelty,
Grief.
And Grief are the two cards from Modern Horizon 2 that really empowered the deck. And it was like just shy because, yeah, Delver was really, really strong, and it didn't really allow the deck to flow up to the top. And I think currently Reanimator is like one of the decks in the format. And for me, I think it would be a solid take in A.
Okay, but I think it would be good also to, and I just want to mention it, we should consider both the online metagame and the paper legacy metagame like combined, kind of, if that is applicable at all. Because I think Reanimator is way stronger online than it is in paper.
Yeah, yeah. I totally agree.
And if you mix these two factors together, I'm a little bit hesitant. I think it is still A, but I could also see it in B, actually. It is between those two.
It's definitely not an S tier.
No.
No, for sure not.
Absolutely not.
Yeah, for sure. Because like in paper, you often have like a lot of players over using sideboard slots against Grievous decks.
Yeah.
It's online, you see a lot of control players like with the one-off surgical in the board or something like that. I mean, now with this high of a meta share in Reanimator, it's
absolutely no,
we are at 2-3, I think, in the control decks. But yeah, in paper, most of the time when you go to your LGS or something like that, your players have like 4-5 cards in the sideboard against Graveyard. Then you have your Reanimator player in tears, but this time's with an EA, because like he can't do anything about it because there is like so much hate you have to play against.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, totally agree here.
So we would put it in solid A
at
the moment. Yeah, lower A would say
A minus.
A minus. Yeah. Okay. Why don't we talk about the next deck?
the boogeyman of the last format that we had before the bannings. It's Delver.
Yeah.
And we're talking about all iterations of Delver. We don't distinguish here between blue red or rug or Grixis. I mean, there's only think rug and blue red at the moment.
Yeah. Mostly,
basically.
For me, that's a solid A.
Yeah, it is, for sure.
In paper tournaments, it's performing really, really nicely, really strong. Also, meta online, it is considerably played. Still, you know, this is kind of the strategy behind Delver or Drangreath Chandler and False Days Wasteland combination is still incredibly strong. And given that they opt to splash for a card like Tamagoyf now, is really a thing that is good in the mirror. It is good. I guess a lot of the removals that are present in the current format and against a lot of different kind of decks that are basically non-white, Goyf can be really strong. And therefore, I would put it instantly in A.
Yeah,
I gotta say, I really love the fact that Goyf is back.
Yeah.
It's just such an... Yeah, it's a mainstay and a staple of the format. And I was really a little bit sad that it was gone and it was outclassed.
Yeah.
But it wasn't really outclassed by creatures. It was outclassed by expressive iteration.
Yeah, basically like Goyf was a mainstay in the format since its creation. And yeah, I would also say Delver is currently a solid 80 attack. Mm-hmm. It lost a really big angle of attack with the Day's Mystic Sanctuary expressive iteration loops. This deck nowadays has to go to a win up to turn 5 and something like that. Then it loses a lot of steam. And so, yeah, it's a really, really good A deck, but definitely not S tier.
It has to decide now if it wants to be a tempo deck.
Mm-hmm.
Or it wants to go faster, it wants to go the grinding game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have like iterations with Uro if you go for Timur, but with no Goyfs and stuff like that, where it's just a way, way slower deck.
Yeah, it's more mid-rangey.
I agree.
So we will put this in A tier.
Yeah, solid A.
So
next deck.
Then we have the 8 of the cast.
The 8 of the cast. Pretty was like
it was gone. Actually, it was gone.
It was kind of gone, and then now it's back with almost the same exact 75. I mean, sideboard of course can change, but the main deck is remained unchanged. There was no card added to the archetype, and just because of the banning and the reshaping of the format, Ikaz just pops up and it's at the top at the moment. The question is, how good is it compared to all other decks?
I'm pretty sure that it's just. I mean, I haven't played it again. I haven't played against it in the last half a year or so.
Yeah.
So I'm really rusty here, but the only thing that's what I'm thinking about is there was no artifact hate or no meaningful artifact hate anymore.
Yeah.
In the format, so people forgot about Meltdown. People forgot about Brotherhood's End. And suddenly, without any really strong artifact hate, it's sure that 8 cast rises to the top. But I gotta say, it feels a little bit like the same like Reanimator. If it gets too strong, it gets easily hated out. Like if you just
play Null Rots.
If you play Null Rots, if you play 2 Meltdowns in the sideboard, suddenly the matchup becomes way more beatable for any red deck here right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the deck is not like cold to a Meltdown. It's not that it's like completely game over, but it is certainly a strong card against the deck. However, this deck has a lot of different tools to beat or combat lots of different decks. It has Chalice from 1. Even Chalice on 2, it can play without any drawbacks at all.
It can play Chalice on 0.
It can, this would be pretty bad for a deck. it can though. And it has Force. It has a lot of card draw. It is incredible at generating any value. And so this combination of really, really disruptive elements and yeah, drawing, being able to draw cards, and we all know how good drawing cards is.
Oh yeah, drawing cards is insane. Yeah.
I would at least put it at A. It is not S tier quite, but it is on the edge in my opinion, even because it is so strong at the moment for the reasons stated.
And we have to
distinguish maybe.
Yeah, distinguish here right now. For the sake of this tier list, we have to use the status quo. And yeah. I also agree here. I think it's a solid A tier.
Yeah. Okay.
For the next one, we have Daniel's
child.
Most favorite deck at the moment.
The nice breakfast, the Austrian breakfast. If I would choose the deck today, it depends a little bit on that. For me, I played a lot of versions of this deck, and there are still a lot of open questions for me. I think the best versions, or like, you can tune this deck
for any given meta
in a lot of different directions, and I think there's not a clear best version, and therefore I think there's still a lot of work to be done for this deck. But the sheer power level it has, potentially, if you find the right configuration in a given metagame, makes it so that this deck can absolutely be A tier. But it is difficult to achieve in all different kinds of metas. People, it is successful with Stoneforge, without, and there's this new version with the staff being very successful also. But people are really, really putting more and more hate against the deck also to the table. More Plague Engineers, more Dress Downs, more...
Fairy Macabres.
Macabre, exactly. So these kind of things can be really problematic for breakfast. And the deck itself has a certain percentage of fail case for its own. If you draw too many Narcomoebas or Dread Returns, or... Like, it has a lot of combo pieces that you would not really like to draw. It isn't... Yeah...
You have it's not game enough, over, but yeah.
Yeah, it's naturally, it's a little bit of, yeah.
Yeah, the problem nowadays is like, it was definitely an A-tier deck, I would say, like a month ago. But nowadays the players are a little bit more prepared. Like a month, 2 months, 3 months ago, the players didn't really know how to play against it. And the players still developed, they played the deck, developed like an edge because they knew how to combo, like do it in steps, how to do it the steps, and how to do you combat the various matchups and stuff like that. And now the opponents are catching up, and like Phil mentioned, like Fairy Macabre, previously there was like Teferi or Orange Chant or like a silence, and it was like basically game over. You had no chance to react, your surgical stayed in hand, and
true.
Oracle hit the table. Nowadays, you have to Fairy Macabre. You still have to like gain access to the hand. You have to hope that you mill the cards in the right order so that you can do the Cabal Therapy to clear the hand and stuff like that. And it makes the combo process really awkward. So nowadays, I think I would put it into B tier. In a meta game where the opponents are not really prepared, it's definitely an A to S tier deck. But I think it had it... It stays in the glory, and it steps down to B.
Yeah,
it settles. Actually, it's a little bit hard to say it had it stays in the glory, but I think it settles to a more reasonable tier where it just belongs.
Yeah.
Because people, like you said, Peter, people were figuring out the intricacies of the deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I can only talk about the last... I think it was the 3-for-1 tournament that we played back in March.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen so many people trying to bolt a Normatine Core, and then you redirected the damage to Baleful Strix.
Yes.
And these are just so little things.
People were not really prepared to how to play against the deck also, The combo is now pretty known to everyone.
Yeah. And that just changed.
Yeah, and getting this knowledge, you really close a lot of free wins that this deck really, really had just against any random opponent who doesn't know what this deck does, which originally was the case. So I fully agree. B.
B tier, yeah.
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 But Death in Texas.
Death in Texas is back? What the fuck?
It is always a favorite of a lot of players. Also in paper, I think it's pretty, at least common.
Yeah, it's common because it's cheap, but not common because the players are actually really good with it.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a Death in Texas player for 5 to 6 years.
And so you're decent.
I'm decent. I'm not good with Death in Texas. Certainly not anymore, because I haven't played the 80-card versions. I won't touch the 80-card version with gloves or anything on. It's just not right for me. No you're in Texas for me, but it has fallen from its former days of glory. I think it's just... Yeah, it's strange that it has 6.4% meta share here right now on Goldfish.
I mean, it must be a really hard deck to play.
It's
on MTGO.
Hard, yeah.
And I mean, it's a really, really complex deck where you have like a lot of different board states you have to evaluate on the fly for every single turn, how to play the game moving forward. You have so many tricks that you have to know. Tricks regarding your own cards, tricks regarding your opponent's cards, because you are so dependent, because you basically lay most of your power down onto the board because it's a creature deck. So yeah, I think for me it's definitely below Breakfast. So it's like we have like a C and F tier. I don't think it's an F tier deck.
Yep.
It's a solid C tier deck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, agree.
In the right hands of a really skilled pilot or a deck expert, a Death in Texas deck expert,
yep,
which there aren't really that many. It's an insane deck, but the skill level is just so incredibly high that you have to put so many hours into grinding with Death in Texas, where you could just play Delver and get so many free wins.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
Just, why go through this valley of tears if you could do it? I mean, you know me. I go through this valley of tears all the time.
Yeah, I agree on that.
I'm sometimes a little bit masochistic, I think. But okay. Yeah, we're putting Death in Texas in C tier.
Yeah. Next one will be Painter.
That's interesting. Painter has just a 5.2% on meta share here on Goldfish.
Which is mostly to the only meta game, yeah, probably. But I don't think that meta share is probably necessarily the most indicative for a strength of a deck.
Definitely not, yeah.
For me, it's one of the better decks to try out to play. It is definitely up there with, in my views, on the same level as maybe Delver.
Yeah.
And therefore, I would say A. Solid A.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I also think that Painter, the black-red version with Chaos Defiler, is just insane. Here, I think we also have to distinguish between MTGO meta and paper meta, because I think Chaos Defiler isn't on Modo, Peter?
It's not on Modo. That's the reason, like, it's completely varies with the deck list. We have a lot, especially in MTG Goldfish, we have a lot of mono-red deck lists, because, like, the card is not there, so you have not... you don't have access to the tool, so you have to play a mono-red version. So the deck slots vary with like boats between the Chaos Defiler, which would have been the card in paper and stuff like that, because you have like a really, really big engine that can attack the battlefield in a mid-range way, because it clears a lot of creatures and permanents, because it destroys basically everything. Planeswalkers onwards, or enchantments to artifacts and creatures. So it's a really, really big thing. And unfortunately, it's not on MTGO, so we don't really know the real ceiling of the deck when a lot of experts are on deck brewing and basically specializing it. But I think it's a really, really good A-tier deck. When we have it on Modo, when the decklist gets configured out in detail, it may move up to S even. But I think we also mentioned it with 8cast. It depends on the hate. But the good thing in Painter is like there aren't any more really, really many artifacts. You have a lot of creatures laying around and they do stuff with artifacts.
Yeah.
But the stuff with artifacts is really, really good and creates value most of the time. So, yeah, will be interesting how it develops, but yeah.
So I think we will be putting Painter into an A tier.
Absolutely.
I totally agree here. The gap between MTGO and Paper is, I think, the biggest on any deck that we will be talking about today.
Most likely.
It's only one or, the, or two or sometimes even a three of, but it's so deciding.
In you played with it. It's insane, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. We have next one of the decks that pops up also in different combinations or configurations and keeps, I don't know, punching through all, even though there is like a card in the format that says you can exile a creature and the controller gains life equal to its power. It's Death Shadow.
It's specifically blue-black Death Shadow.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, there are a few versions out there, and the two most popular is like the basically blue-black tempo shell, and there is the blue-black scam shell, I would say, with grief and stuff like that. And I think this card would, under normal circumstances, I would put it into C tier, but this deck is currently a little bit on the rise. It won a tournament in Italy with 70 people, and it performs just really, really good. And yeah, then metagame shows. I think it's on the upswing. It's like it's currently in its days, in its glory. And yeah, I would rate it the same as Breakfast.
Me too. I think at the moment it has a good matchup against Breakfast. Against Delver, it's fine. And against Reanimate or any combo decks, just...
It's really, against really spell-based combo, Death Shadow is historically a great deck to have. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it struggles a little bit against control, but yeah, you can tempo him out sometimes. Yeah. You don't have the problem of dealing with expressive iteration from any opponents at the moment. So you can really sneak in a Shadow or Murktide in or two and then kill your opponent before they get to cast a Terminus or whatever. Solid B for me as well.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, for me too. And yeah, I just wanna talk about a little bit about the experimental list that I've seen running around. It's a red-black shadow list, which basically plays also Reanimate and Grief and Dragon's Rage Chandler and Lightning Bolt. It has its first 5-0, I think, this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice list and certainly something to look out for because of the sheer power of Grief, Death Shadow and Scourge of the Skyclaves.
Mm-hmm.
And they are playing, I think, the really spicy thing here in this list is free Sign in Blood.
To grind a little bit and...
Yeah, which they use to grow the Shadow, which they use to finish your opponent off to just make the last two damage. Really nice idea. So I think it's a
nice mix, and this really shows how creative or different versions of decks you can brew and still be reasonably successful. To be honest, I doubt it would be like on par on any other Shadow versions.
Probably not, yeah.
Because for this kind of version, I would say Swords of Plowshares has been one of the most best cards. And I think this would be one big, big problem for the deck. But overall, if you can
dodge wipe removal, you're probably tearing through a lot of other decks.
Absolutely. I agree. Okay. Next on the list is Sneak and Show.
Yeah, it's always interesting, actually, Sneak and Show.
It's currently really on an upswing. From a metagame percentage share, it's seen a lot, actually, in leagues and stuff like that, which is, with a meta share of 4% seems like it doesn't win that much in leagues, I would say, because like it would show up more if it's really, really successful in the leagues. But yeah, it's like a deck, it's an A and B combo deck, it's blue, it has consistency, sometimes it loses to itself, we have a new hot toy in the Drifter.
Basement Drifter, yeah.
Which uses the top card of your deck to transform into another creature in pre-combat, which can allow you to get an instant in the Aletta 6 if you flip like an Emrakul.
And you can set it up with Brainstorm.
And Ponder. So it's a really, really cool card. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's interesting how it develops. I would put it, actually, I think into C tier. But mm-hmm. a little bit, it's like C plus for me. When the deck list is really figured out, how many drifters and stuff like that. Because now you have like basically 8 cards that can be the part.
You play now to 8 show and tell, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you have the 4 drifters, you have the 4 show and tell, you have the 4 sneak and show.
I don't think you play 4 sneak and show anymore.
I don't know the numbers, yeah. It has to be like developed how they want to construct their decks, so. Will be interesting how the deck moves forward, but I would put it like between B and C, and I would put it below Breakfast for sure and Death Shadow. Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, also it's not funny if we're all agreeing all the time. But I gotta say, if you would have said yeah it's bad or just put it into C tier, I would have certainly fought you.
Yeah.
But I totally agree. It's between B and C and it's on an upswing. I think Vesuvian Drifter is really the way to go. You just omit Sneak Attack totally.
Okay. And it's a flying 2/4 for 3 mana, which can block Delvas. Yeah. And Stonewall Dragon Mage Generals. So it's a really, really good creature on its own.
And also it triggers also on...
the opponent's upkeep.
On the opponent's combat step. So you can surprise block with an Grizzlebrand.
No, you have to block it beforehand. It doesn't...
You can brainstorm in response to the trigger, put the...
But the attackers are not announced at this point. It's the it's like pre-combat before declaring attackers. So it's not a surprise block.
Okay, but then you still have a Grizzlebrand.
Yeah, you still have a big booty protecting yourself. Yeah.
And attacking into Grizzlebrand, we all know that it's not really the best thing to do. You don't want to give your opponent 7 cards for free.
That's so true.
With that being said, as we see that this is an upswing, why not just give it a little bit of a nod there and put it into B tier? Just be a little bit optimistic.
Make it B minus, yeah?
Make it B minus. Why not? I would say so.
It's okay. I would rate it a tier below Breakfast, but we can put it in
here. Until you get crushed in Bologna by Sneak and Show. Yeah.
That's depending on Painter's inability in the formal version to win with combat fast. But yeah. Next deck.
Doomsday. Still there, not like completely forgotten, but...
It had its heyday.
It's difficult to rate because you have to factor in how difficult the deck is to play. It is still, I think one factor is for sure the version with personal tutor is the best one.
And the cost is still an issue. I think the personal tutor will get reprinted.
Yeah, but the problem in paper is like the 4 underground sea.
Really? I think the problem really is the... because most of the... I don't want to say leagues, but most of the places where people are playing nowadays allow proxies, most likely allow proxies of reserved list cards, but not proxies of other cards. And therefore, 50 euros for a personal tutor is just insane.
Has it fallen that much?
I mean, yeah.
I don't know about the price of it.
It's a chase. I mean,
these are of course problems for, but this is not concerning. Concerning the metagame and strength of a deck.
Yeah,
now.
That's true.
I think given the context of, let's put it, I think Painter, Death Shadow, Breakfast, which also has a little bit of interaction.
Endurances in the main decks.
A lot of endurances. I think Doomsday has a really hard time at the moment. And therefore, I'm not too sure it is a really good combo deck. I would definitely rate it below Breakfast, Shadow. it's Nick and Joe. Yeah. For me, it's
for me it's also C.
Yeah.
And regarding the player base and stuff like that, I think a lot of players moved on from Doomsday to Cephalid Breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like the Oracle deck. And yeah,
I think
Doomsday has its few connoisseurs that play the deck, but I think when the deck is better positioned, the player base will return to the deck and try to develop it. It's a little bit on the downswing. We put it into C. The ceiling is definitely much, much higher for the deck. Maybe you need to construct the deck in a different way, or you have to just wait till the meta game develops. You just have to
be a deck specialist. That's the easy thing to do here. If you are a deck specialist, or if your opponent is a deck specialist on Doomsday, you're in pretty much big trouble.
Yeah. And yeah, maybe the metagame shakes it up so the deck will be higher. But yeah, as you said, like for specialists, it's definitely an A tier deck.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the average player, it's a C tier deck.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even lower. For me, it would be F.
No, I don't think it's F. It's a really, really fast combo deck.
If I would play it.
I mean, most of the decks are an F for you, but...
Fair enough.
Okay.
But then we have lands.
Lands. Red, green,
really good currently.
Oh, yeah.
It's really good currently.
It's underplayed. We have... two lands players in our local LGS.
Mm-hmm.
And they're crushing.
Yeah, they're pretty strong, I gotta say. So, the deck is pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
It feels...
For me, it's a little bit difficult. I'm not a lands expert whatsoever. I only played like a lot of good decks against the deck, so I don't... I personally never had an issue. So, I imagine Sneaky and Show... Breakfast, Reanimator all being kind of problematic for the deck. I don't know if that is true. I for sure know about Breakfast. Sneak and Show, I'm not sure because, yeah, you have Karakas. You can, I don't know.
You can crop rot for it.
You have like Glacial Chasm or
Maze of If.
You have like the tools, but it's still, when I, you know, Sneak and Show is just very fast.
Yes, I don't know. Sneak and Show is fast. But I think you're a favorite against Reanimator.
Mm-hmm.
Because Crop Rot into Bazooka Bog is still a thing.
Can be the case, of course. Unless you...
And sometimes you even have the Endurances in the main league and stuff like that. Sure in the sideboard. I think lands is just... it has its good part because like... Delva was on the downswing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Delver was always not a bad matchup. I think I would rate it as a 50-50, basically. But now this matchup... And I think, like, with the removal of Delver, a lot of good matchups came up to the front for lands. And we have the same case here. If you're a deck specialist, the deck has a really, really high ceiling. And... I think currently a lot of good lands players are putting hands on the deck. And I think the first, one of the later challenges now on this or even the later weekend was even won by lands. So it's definitely in the spot now to be a contender in the format. I don't think I would rate it into A, but I think it's a B deck for me.
Daniel will be disagreeing here, but I think also it's a B tier deck.
Yeah, okay. I kind of, yeah, it's B minus. I just want to put that in minus.
A minus there. Yeah. I'm completely okay with it. Because like Sneak and Show is also a B minus deck.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay.
Next we have Chino's special elves.
Elves. Mm-hmm.
What do we think about elves?
That's a good question.
Solid C to B for me.
Solid C to B. I would not put it on C, I think. I don't know what... Well, yeah, it depends on kind of the matchup at the moment.
It's not an A-tier deck for
me. No, but there are... Plague Engineer is on a historical low, I think. I don't see any decks with Plague Engineer anymore.
Death Shadow has it, I think.
Death Shadow should have it, yeah. And, I mean, Fury was like a hit for the deck because you have the Brotherhoods, and it's another good card against it that sees play in the sideboard because there was not really a good sweeper in that it also hits artifacts. So it's like a dual slot basically in the sideboard for a lot of the red cards. You have like the 8 removal spells in the white decks with Ending and Swords to Plowshares. We have the resurgence of like how's it called, the sweeper of Terminus. I would rate it maybe B minus, same as Lands. But like we have a really small resurgence of good tools against the deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if we have a little bit more Plague Engineer, I would surely put it into C even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's same as Sneak and Show, Lands, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I would also put it at B.
At the bottom of B, yeah.
And now for the elephant. Ah, no, not for the elephant in the room, but for...
The rhino in the room, you mean?
Before we talk about Jeskai Stoneblade.
Yeah.
Is it now really Stoneblade or Control?
That's pretty... I think it's difficult at the moment because...
Should we distinguish or not? I think it is a different deck.
It's a completely different deck,
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's so many flavors of Jeskai at the moment. You have Stoneblade, you have Jeskai Staff Control, you have sometimes even the Days Undoing Narset's Hullbreacher.
Yeah.
There are so many ways you can play a mid-rangey, control-y Jeskai deck that it's really hard to put them into a single tier category. It's not as easy as with Delver, where we can just cram everything together and just put it into A tier because Delver does Delver things all the time.
Yeah.
And these are just always good. But with Jeskai, it's really hard for me. If we were talking about Staff, Jeskai Staff, I would certainly put it into B+. Because it's a good deck. If we were talking about the other Jeskai versions, I would put them into C-.
What about Jeskai? You mean like Jeskai Stoneblade, or you mean Jeskai Control?
Jeskai Control. Maybe even in B-. Yeah.
Yeah. The problem nowadays, I think, with evaluating Jeskai is like, I think that you currently have to be really, really hard into the deck because like the play patterns are really, really hard to recognize from the outside. We have like now with Trakus Marcus Ewald, he's playing Jeskai Staff Control, and he's even now on Urza Saga. So we have like a shell.
Did it first.
even went like second into a challenge. And like...
Is it the Esper?
No, it's
Jeskai. It's or even blue white with only blasts in the board. I think it's blue white with only blasts in the board.
Yes.
And so we are a little bit on the do you know the Raghavan decks of the day with Urza Saga and stuff like that. So we are like, I mean, stuff is not a Raghavan, but you have like the small draw engine with the Urza Saga and stuff like that that you want to develop over time to create some form of advantage. And then you have like the shove the Stoneforge Mystic in and to create the Kaldra. And then you have the deck that draws 4 cards, plays 2 ponders in between, and then makes a 2/2 shark at the end step with Shark Typhoon. So I think these decks share the colors but are so far apart that could not be any further.
Yeah.
And the play patterns are hard when you don't know the
so deck. Therefore we will just split them apart here. Am I right?
This is what I wanted to kind of conclude here. What I would do is put definitely Jeskai Stoneblade is a completely different deck in my views. This is more like a mid-range deck. But we should combine Jessica Control together
with stuff.
Yeah, with stuff or an asset or whatever this data doing version. I think this could be one kind of package. Because in my view, this is the same issue as in Breakfast. You have different versions at the moment.
And each place is different, yeah.
And I think because of this, that is not quite solved. This also shows how diverse the meta game is at the moment, which is a good thing. But there is a lot of potential here. Don't you really need to factor in into account that Narset is one of the best planeswalkers at the moment in the game.
Yeah.
To be sure, denying opponent to draw cards is really, really good at the moment.
Yeah, that's true.
And also, don't forget there is a card that exists, which is Fairy Mastermind. There's also a card, kind of taxing effect that sees a little bit of play and can win or has decent success with it.
Blue-black fairies, when?
That's the question. And therefore, Jeskai Control, if you really talk about control in any version, whatever, if you tune it,
I think it's a B+.
For me, it's a solid A.
It's a solid A?
Yeah. Jeskai is definitely, in my view, a solid A.
Yeah, I would rate it as a B+, because I think the ceiling is higher, and I think we see the specialist now playing the deck very, very well, which could see the other players coming close to the level of understanding of the deck in like a few weeks. So that for me it would be an A tier deck, but I can see why you put it into A.
Absolutely. I think Jeskai has the best tools at the moment with Narset and not necessarily staff. I'm not really sure if this is the thing you want to be, but I imagine out of Fairy Mastermind or staff, whatever, and Narset especially is so great against the old format at the moment. But yeah, I guess we have a tie between us, so maybe you feel you have to decide. Unless you completely disagree and put it into another tier.
No, I'm actually going here with putting into with Peter here.
Uh-huh. One.
I would have put it into B. He has made a really good point that deck specialists are now playing it to really great success. And the list isn't, like you also said, not really refined. So at the moment it's B. It has the potential to be A.
I'm just giving you credit that I think it could be tuned and it has the tools to be absolutely one of the best decks.
For sure.
It has the tools.
It is not so unclear as it in Breakfast, for example.
Yeah, that's true.
In my views, way clearer.
But if we are going... using the data we have right now... I think it's B, and it has potential to be A or even A+.
I mean, for me, it's just one of the points. I would put it above Elves or Death Shadow, which we also put in B. That's one reason to kind of distinguish. That's the reason.
But like Elves and Death Shadow were... Death Shadow is in the middle of the tier. Elves is also in the middle, and Jessica is like on the top of the tier. Yeah. It's like definitely a B+ deck. So it stands above those. That's the problem when you have like
five
tiers.
You have to put it somewhere, and then you have to like refine it a little bit within the tiers.
Okay.
What's interesting is that we don't have actually any S tier at the moment.
At the moment, not.
And we are coming into 2.2% meta share with the next deck, which is, I think, criminally underplayed.
Which is what?
The elephant in the room.
It's Rhino time.
Yeah. The deck seems so incredibly strong with all the Force of Negations and Force of Wills. And yeah, eight power on turn one or even turn zero are nothing to scoff at, in my opinion.
I think it's mostly turn two.
Yeah, on average, probably turn two or turn three, depending on what... I mean, it has the eight mana guides.
It says eight soul guides. Yeah.
Soul guides, yeah. Okay, soul guides.
Spirit guides. Spirit guides. Spirit guide. And monkey spirit guide.
Simian spirit guide.
It's monkey.
You don't play them a lot, right?
I think it's
I
nice.
I only have two in my deck.
Because it can be quite proactive. Absolutely agree. It could can put a lot of pressure onto the board. But I think given that you're a Cascade deck and you are you're missing white as a primary removal spell and you're relying on things like what have you, Borrower or Fire and Ice, which is absolutely, in my opinion, is not the best.
Yeah, Fire and Ice is not great. But
this,
there are
this definitely does not put it over the top as Jeskai, in my view.
No, absolutely no, not. For sure not.
But no, therefore
I think it's a solid C plus deck.
Absolutely agree here.
Yeah, C plus is something I can get behind.
It is on
it's not in B, it's underplayed, in my opinion, and
yeah.
It certainly needs more refinement to put it into B tier.
And especially with now seeing like the likes of Teferi coming around with the before mentioned Jeskai control and stuff like that. This is also a hindrance for the deck.
Yeah, Teferi is just insane against this deck. Yeah.
And we have like four color or Bant, red, Super Friends and stuff like that, where Teferi is also present. Yeah. It has some problems, I would say, but it can go for a turn one spell with like the Minds of Gemstones and the Eight Spirit Guides. It can be really proactive. It has turn a lot two, of Minskin reactive. Boom. Yeah, it has a lot of reactive tools with like we see here like eight forces. Yeah, but we will see. We will see.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's just underplayed.
That we can agree on. Mm-hmm. I think it's underexplored, especially with its success in Modern.
Yeah.
Then we have like the Titan in the Room. Mono green
Cloud Post.
For me, this deck kind of seems very gone.
Yeah, it's...
I never seen it. I mean, on the, as we can see here, it pops up just a little bit. But also in Paper Magic, it is not seen at all. And I think for a good reason. I don't think this deck has any merit at the moment to be played. The combo decks are just way faster than you. I don't know. Control decks even.
I think, I mean, Breakfast.
No.
Breakfast should be good against it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It has basically no interaction at all.
It has only Endurance, and Endurance is like... Yeah, I mean, you have to play it really right. But you can't really, if there are
Shadow like, also seems so strong against this deck. I don't know. Overall, I would have put it in F, to be honest.
I also agree. Cloud Post is...
One of the
Don't want to play against Cloud Post because I know I get crushed by it. Because black midrange or midrange decks always get crushed by Cloud Post.
Yeah.
But overall in the meta game, I don't think that this is a good choice for any given tournament.
No. Right.
Yep. You will run into it because people are loving the deck and are playing it, but I don't see the merit here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we have like Naya Depths. I think the deck should still have legs. I think it's also underplayed, as same as Cascade. I would put it therefore into C tier. I think the deck is good, but we don't see it. And it could be because like
It's just maybe that Lance is the better version of it at the moment because it's very similar in strategy. It just, it has the benefit.
It has the white removal.
It has the white removal, which is really strong.
And is more affected by the white removal than Lance.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Exactly,
I think it's C tier.
Yeah. It's a solid C tier deck.
Absolutely, yeah. Okay.
Next one, we got Blue Sinif.
This like is your specifically the Yorion version, yeah. This deck is okay. If I would be totally in my opinion at least, this deck has a lot of potential in terms of being able to grind against control decks, against slower decks. It is like it has all the bombs and value cards in the world, but it's just so inconsistent and to blow it up, it's a little bit clunky. You don't find the exact interaction pieces when you need them, but just because you have 80 cards. I would just put it actually in F. at the moment.
I also think we haven't talked about traditional four-color control. It just isn't there. But I think traditional four-color control, like Niklas Holtmann played.
This is a different deck.
It's a totally different deck, and it's 60 cards, and it's way better. It's way better, in my opinion. I don't know why people are jamming 20 more cards in it.
Yeah, I think as we had a few times already, it's like it's a little bit similar in playstyle, so it shares a little bit of the player base. Sometimes you like the black in there because of Leovold and stuff like that. Sometimes you like the red in there because of like Minsk and Pooh. And I think it's just fallen a little bit out of grace. So maybe not the good players are playing the deck, but the worst players are playing the deck. Or the average player is playing the deck. So I think it's fallen a little bit. Yeah, it's C minus F.
No, it's for me. It's an F.
For me also.
Okay.
You're over.
I didn't put into FT.
Yeah, traditional four color control is, in my opinion, more on the.
Yeah, we can also put it there.
Yeah. I think we then go only to a few decks, because like the 1% decks. Yeah. But we definitely want to talk about Mono Red Prison. Mm-hmm. What is your stance on Mono Red Prison? It's so hard to evaluate for me because like in our local community, like it's always strong, but the players like don't know what to play. They cut now a lot of the Blood Moon effects and stuff like that, or skim on them because they don't really find them too good. They like more the proactive way in like turn one Fable and stuff like that, because you can turn one Rebel Master. So the deck changed a little bit over the last year, I would say. It's between B and C. It's like it's a good deck, but I don't know where to put it, basically. Yeah. For me,
no, for me it's actually solid C.
Yeah, for me too. I agree here with Daniel. It's strong, but the heydays of Chalice are gone because Prismatic Ending exists.
Yeah,
it's not like you can get any free wins or that much free wins anymore with
Blood Moon, because Blood Moon basics are really potent at the moment and very much played.
And you need to have 2 to 3 basics in each deck. And
yeah, and the players themselves also say that the good card is Trinisphere. And so Trinisphere is like the best card nowadays in Mono Red Prison Shell.
So absolute C.
Then I would put a little bit more emphasis now on like the traditional categories. I would like to evaluate with you guys Maverick, Allurn a little bit. And then I think
you want to talk about ANT or which Storm deck are we talking?
Let's put Storm in one archetype.
Storm in one archetype, yeah.
And I think then it would be basically over. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So let's start with Maverick. What is your stance on Maverick currently?
I think it's a little bit stronger than Blue Sinith.
And I think it's worse than Nali Depths.
Yeah.
So we have it like in C minus.
It's certainly a strong deck, and also again deck specialists are pretty great with it. It has all the tools to combat the metagame, but it suffers the problem that these decks always have and being that they're non-blue. They don't find the right things.
I agree.
If you would make Blue Sinith into 60 card deck, I think it could be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like the question is now, do they play the combo finish? No. Yeah, I really liked the Maverick decks where they played the combo finish with
the one
of Dark Depths, because it gave the deck a really, really good tool to win the game. And I think this is just missing for the deck.
Yeah, I totally agree here. Put it into
C
minus.
C minus, yeah.
The next one that you wanted to talk about would be Allurn.
Yeah.
What's your stance on Allurn, Peter? I have my thoughts.
My thoughts with Allurn is like a little bit similar to Fujin. It's like always a deck that's really clunky on the creature side, but the combo finish is really, really strong. So it's like, on the one hand, you kind of want to handle the creatures. On the other hand, you always have to fear the combo. It's a little bit like breakfast. I think the deck is just... it has to be built in a specific way, which needs a lot of slots in a deck. So you have a lot of deck space that is diluted because you need it for the combo. I mean, it now is only Azeroth in Alluron, because like you can play him 100 times and win the game. But you have to draw the Alluron and play it, and it's a 4 mana enchantment. If they deal with it, it's kind of
but bad. It's pretty hard to deal with, because Prismatic Ending for 4 of a 4 colors is extremely hard to get.
Yeah, it's mostly the Force of Will that can be timed, because then you are playing against a mediocre midrange deck. But a mediocre midrange deck can also be good.
Yeah.
It's like the same thing when Breakfast popped up. You don't really know what you're up to. Because on the one hand, like the 2-drops and the 3-drops hit you into the face. On the other hand, I don't want to die to the combo because they have 2 cards still in hand because they draw cards because they play the Baleful Strix or Icewind Quartal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what are you up against? And that's the reason I really, really like midrange control, midrange combo decks, because they have like 2 angles to attack you.
Yep.
It's also by sideboarding. They most likely still have 2 angles of attack. So you kind of overload into one angle and then the other angle hits you.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's either a B minus or a C plus deck. So it's like, it's a good deck. I don't know where to put it, but it's a good deck. Mm-hmm. And I think it's criminally underplayed because of the Modo Clock.
Yeah. Okay. And that's where I wanted to chime in. I also think it's really underplayed. It's incredibly strong. I don't think the all-in versions with Recruit of the Guard that go for the fast combo as possible are the right way to go. So the straight-up bug version, which are a little bit more dirty, but have a stronger mid-range plan and just make more like, oops, I win style games. With the combo, I also think the only thing that's holding a Lurn back is the Modo Clock, and it should be played a lot more in paper.
And
because it's so strong.
And one thing the deck misses is, like we had in Breakfast, the sorcery that you can cycle for a wizard. If there would exist a card like that to cycle for an enchantment, the deck would rise above, because like it's only like the 3 or 4 Alluron that you have in the deck, and you need to find it. It would help the consistency to if it would be a good card. But in the current stance, I think it's a really solid, good deck to learn, to master yourself, where you can really shine as a deck specialist. So
Daniel, what's your verdict?
Just because I'm saying... I just want to comment maybe on a few points. Just because you said, Peter, a lot of cards are dedicated to the win or to the combo, I would disagree completely here. I think the only card that is dedicated to the combo is Alluron and Azeroth. Yeah. That's it. So all the other cards are value pieces, actually. So in a nutshell almost, you're just playing a control deck, a midrange deck, sorry. Yeah. With a lot of card draw, and then the oops, I win with Alluron at the moment. Yeah, when you cast it, and even if it's a one of Azeroth, it doesn't matter, because
you draw into it.
You draw into it. You have the combo with either Kotal or Strix and
the Harpies.
And Harpy. Then you also have a Harpy plus Uro to draw the deck and all at instant speed. You can just win at instant speed. And you don't have to have the Alluron. That's the big thing. You just have Uro. You just have 7 to 8 Strix. you have
Abrupt Decay.
Abrupt Decay as a really, really prime.
Procedure, maybe even.
Can be played. And one, what I really like about this deck is you typically, if you play it well, you don't care about Wasteland. You don't care about Graveyard Hate. There's only like a Miser Aura, okay, you can live without it. And you are strong against Delor because you have like 7 to 8 Strix. And you can just build a sideboard completely to host any other combo decks, for example. You have access to Plague Engineer, Opposition Agent, Veil of Summer, Thoughtseize, Surgical, whatever. You can completely devastate combo decks. The only thing that I'm not so sure about is the control matchup. Historically, Alluren is very good against control. But here, this is what I was saying earlier. Narset and also Mastermind to an extent are very good against this deck. This deck is drawing a lot of cards. I know you can kill the Narset with a couple of Kotal or Strix at the end. But when you get there, it takes up a lot of time and a lot of resources to do so. So I'm not so sure about this control matchup, but other than that, I think Alluren is very, very much up there, absolutely underplayed, and I would put it absolutely at least B+.
Okay, perfect.
If not totally A minus.
It's B. For me, it's also B tier.
It's B. It's definitely not A minus for me, but it's...
Alluren is insane. The deck is criminally underplayed.
Absolutely. So what do we have last as...
Storm. Do one last one. That's Storm. So we put Epic Storm, ANT, and
Oops.
No, Oops isn't Storm.
No, Oops isn't Storm.
Yeah, ANT, Epic Storm, Epic Gamble, and Black Saga Storm. All these Storm decks into one category. I think Storm is not in a really good shape right now. We have Death Shadow at B that's really good against any kind of spell-based combo. The creature combo decks are almost as fast as any kind of spell-based combo nowadays, with Breakfast just going turn one Nomads, turn two kill you. They make a very good Storm impression. So, and they can beat down also. It's hard. I love playing Storm. But
you just really wanted to say it, but I guess we have to. For me, it's a solid F.
Yeah, unfortunately, hate the fact
I also hate it.
I would put it onto C minus, just for the laugh of the Storm.
We have to be honest to ourselves. It is
at the moment currently really hard on the downswing. We have a lot of fast or interactive decks on the front, so it's like not something dirty that allows you to do something up to turn three. It's like either I hit you into the face on turn two, or we have like we do something meaningful for the first three turns, and then we have seven counter spells up and you do nothing for the rest of the game, or even have a threat on the board and do something.
And what's also happening is people are always prepared for Storm.
That's absolutely, in paper 100% true.
The two things people are always prepared for in paper, Graveyard and Storm.
Yeah, that's the thing, because a lot of hit pieces are overlapping to be strong against Storm. A random Chalice, a random Thoughtseize, a random, I don't know.
Deafening Silence.
Whatever, yeah. There's always a little bit of...
And the problem is, like, for the sideboard spaces, it always feels bad because, like, I didn't pack enough Graveyard Hit. I didn't pack enough Storm Hit. But you never feel that bad. My opponent resolved the Minsk and Boon, now I lost. Because this happened on turn six.
Talk for yourself.
I mean, it's basically true for most of the... Because players mostly go about feelings. Okay. And therefore, I think we put it into F. I think we are now going...
What I would suggest as like a final quick round, if you would agree, why not just we say our deck of choice that would be closest to S, if it would be either now or maybe in the far future? How would you say it?
For I want to begin for right now. I want to go with the most likely opinion that it's Delver will be S tier.
Okay.
In the near future.
In the near future. At the moment, the nearest to S tier would be Painter. Mm-hmm. With Chaos Defiler, it would be Painter. The closest.
I think in both ways it could be Painter. Because like if you think about it, you only need one strong artifact or something like that. And Wizards in the recent time really loves putting like something like it comes back from the graveyard or it gets put into the graveyard or and enter the battlefield trick and stuff like that. And you have like the tutor for the cards. I think Painter is like it has a lot of chances with new printings to get an upgrade to the deck. Even though the core and a lot of the utility pieces are really, really strong. And blue won't go away from the metagame, so the blasts are always strong. I think Painter can be an S tier deck.
Mm-hmm. You also think then Painter?
Yeah.
I would agree if if there was not another deck at the moment. Delver, yeah, I think for Delver, it would need another card. Another, like, booking card, one. Like Renner 6, like Expressive Iteration. Yeah,
that's why I say
and it will come, future, and it then, will come. And then Delver is up there. I fully agree.
Give it 1 year.
But right now, for me, if I would pick it, for me, it's solid. It's just 8 cast. I think this is the best control deck in the format. It has one of the best grind potentials. And also one of the best disruption packages, even though it's mono blue. But I think this is such a nicely well-oiled machine, kind of. Yep. I know cards like Meltdown are strong against the deck, but overall, you can play around
Emery
it.
Emery is really, really strong.
Absolutely. This would be my pick. And I think this kind of concludes our tier list.
We will put the tier list into our show notes. So Daniel and myself are playing at the Four Seasons Spring next week in Bologna in Italy.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, Peter isn't there because he has other things to do. But we will rock the team trials. We will play the Legacy side event and the Legacy main event on Sunday. I simply can't wait to see the gathering again.
Nice, yeah.
And meet all those beautiful people out there. And so come say hi. If you listen to until now and you're at four seasons, come say hi and have a quick chat with us. Mm-hmm. We will try to make something like an on-the-road episode and then just cut everything together and put it on air.
Can't wait for the mysterious burn mirror again.
I don't with Peter plan to
yeah, me neither. Burn will stay burn. At home. Burn will had its run. It had its run.
I will bring three legs with me myself. But yeah.
This was nice, yeah.
So, if you listened until right now, then you probably like what we are doing. So, consider following us on our social media. It's response_legacy. If you you can find me on Twitter, it's @finnickmtg, PHINIKMTG. Peter, where can we find you? Certainly not in Bologna next week.
Certainly not in Bologna next week. Unfortunate, but you can find me on Twitter @unicornlord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. Where can we find you, Daniel?
Of course, in Italy next week, together with Phil, battling with some cards. And in the meantime, and always, of course, also on Twitter, it is @FlyingDelver.
So sling your wizard squares, and we'll see you.
In response, Bologna, deal.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.